And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, live from Los Angeles, California, where the season is right around the corner. It must be, because Kevin Arnovitz is sitting on a couch across from me in a hotel room, and we're going to talk about the NBA. How are you, sir?
I'm very well. How are you?
First, I would be remiss if I did not say that last night I had 12 delicious bacon-wrapped dates that you, sir, you made them.
I did make these, which is kind of funny because, like, I didn't eat pork for ages. And but the bacon-wrapped date with the Parmesan inside the date, wrapped in the bacon.
Appropriated from Chef Suzanne Goyen, Los Angeles chef.
It became my dinner. I didn't have a dinner. Okay. That was my dinner. I don't know how to do – I don't know how to cook anything. It's embarrassing.
You believe I kept a kosher home for years?
Wow.
And now look at me.
Just bacon overflowing, bacon. Just trays and trays of bacon coming out of your oven.
Grease and Tupperware in my fridge.
Here we are. It's Monday. We're recording this on Monday evening Pacific time. Lakers media days. And all the teams are going to China and Japan and India have their media day in 4 days. So we're here. The offseason's over. We're here.
Oh, yes. Clippers Sunday.
We're here.
A Sunday media day.
That's obnoxious. And we do this every year. This is probably the fourth one of these. We each pick our five most confusing teams. You can define confusing however you like. I define confusing in that I see a high level of variance in what their win-loss record could be. Some people define confusing as, like, how is this all going to fit? Some people define confusing in other ways. I leave it up. I'm a benevolent host. I leave it up to the guests. You could define confusing however you want. We rank them 1 to 5. We discuss them. It's an annual tradition. Are you ready?
Yeah, and actually, to add to you, by the way, I don't think confusing is a pejorative for these teams. Like, I am very bullish on many of my confusing teams. In fact, my bullishness is a source of confusion on one specific case. So I don't hate your team if I am confused by it. It's more I'm trying to figure
out. No more caveats. Right, this is the year of no more caveats. I'm not gonna play to the Twitter crazies who are gonna accuse me of hating their team no matter what I say. No more.
What's Twitter?
No more. It's a new year. It's 29. It's gonna be 2020. We're gonna have to inhabit the moon pretty soon, or Mars or something. It's a new time. Okay, without further... Oh, and by the way, I think in the past, we've had, I would say, over under 2.5 teams overlapping.
I'm curious to see.
I think this year, I'm going to predict less overlap. There are more teams where I'm like, ooh, that's an interesting team. Kevin Arnovitz, your most confusing team for the 2019-2020 NBA season?
The Boston Celtics.
Not even on my list. No. We're 1 for 1. Start.
Now, and I'm bullish on Boston. Here's what's interesting and confusing to me. So, Kemba Walker is now going to be running the show there. This is one of the most pick-and-roll reliant players in basketball. This side of Trae Young, who's still very young, or J.J. Barea, who's just a novel, you know, kind of a bench guy. And typically, I mean, Kemba has been down in Charlotte. These have been pretty simple constructions schematically. We're talking about high pick-and-roll, high double pick-and-roll. It's been fun to watch him kind of diversify his attack. He's gotten to be really, really good. He's gone from being kind of a fastball pitcher to a guy who, you know, yeah, throws off speed. He, you know, more Conley-esque. He can spot angles. Like, I loved watching Kemba Walker grow up as a pick and roll point guard.
And Conley was the comp for him 5 years ago. It's like when they extended him, it was like, well, he's, you know, little, he's kind of wily, good in and out dribble. Like, his ceiling is probably Conley. Defensively, he's not ever going to get to where Mike is or was. But offensively, he has the best in and out dribble in the league. He does stuff with the ball that is obscene. Obscene.
And he reads in a way that he didn't 3-4 years ago. I mean, it's been fun to watch him grow up. Now, Boston, and here is sort of the confusion. Over the last couple of years, I think 24th collectively over the last 2 years in pick and roll frequency, right? This is not a pick and roll team. Now, I do think that, you know, it's not that they haven't deployed a fair amount of spread ball screen action, right? Like, they certainly do. And I think there's this notion that, oh, it's Brad Stevens. Every play is ballet and it looks something like the 2013 Spurs. No. I mean, it's actually, I think, more conventional. It's really an amalgamation of a hodgepodge of styles. But what I'm not so much confused, but curious about, and I can't get my kind of head around, is how is this going to look? Because I'm trying to picture Kemba Walker in kind of a, like, that particular, very conventional. He's very good at it, but it is very conventional stylistically. In the context of that supporting cast, other ball handlers, you know, it's so funny also just looking at the personnel. It's amazing how quickly, like, a 3-year and an option deal goes. You realize that Gordon Hayward's on his last definite, I mean, he's got an option for year 4. And this is his last Celtic season, possibly.
Some interesting trade possibilities with Gordon Hayward this season. We will get, I'll get into them another time.
Yeah, so that's the source of my confusion. It's just you have to me, a point guard in the league who is so, is defined by his individual style as a point guard, is any in the league going to a team that is, you know, not really have, I mean, Kyrie certainly used the pick and roll, but just, it's just new. It's going to be new for the Boston Celtics. It's going to be new for Jason Tatum. It's going to be new for Brad Stevens. It's going to be new for everybody, for Marcus Smart. There are a lot of ball handlers. You know, Kemba can certainly play off the ball, but that, he's been that guy who controls a conventional pick and roll attack. That is what he does. He is in a team that has not absorbed that traditionally.
It's new and it's old. So honestly, I probably would have put them on my list, except I already talked about them with Simmons extensively, so I didn't want to overlap too much. But it's new and it's old in this sense. Kyrie's beef with Boston's offense was, you didn't just run 50 pick and rolls for me every game. The beef that Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Gordon Hayward and other people had with the offense last year was, you still ran too many Kyrie pick and rolls. So like, everyone was disgruntled. Too many pick and rolls, too few pick and rolls. And so I think in Brad Stevens' dreams, the way you would solve this is a little bit of like Tony Parker-ish stuff where Kemba brings it up, gives it up, circles around, maybe gets it back, dribble handoff, high speed pick and roll, kick over to Tatum, drive, kick over to Jaylen Brown, corner three. That's the dream. We saw that movie last year and it didn't quite work out as well as the Celtics hoped and everybody was unhappy. And that was with a guy in Al Horford who really doesn't care if he shoots 8 times a game, 5 times a game, 12 times a game. So if they start Kemba, Brown, Tatum, Hayward, Cantor, 5 dudes who all need the ball.
Yes.
Could be a very potent offensive lineup. Defensively, it's good 2-3-4, bad 1-5, bad Walker Cantor. That's not a good pick and roll defense combination.
No. Although I'm not as worried. There seems to be compensation. And we've seen this year after year where, oh, that guy's going to that team. Is it going to hurt the defense? No. I mean, even Boston with Kyrie.
This is a higher degree of uncertainty, though, okay, with their big man rotation, to the point that wouldn't surprise me if Enes Kanter opens the season coming off the bench and they start a center who is maybe a little bit more defensive-oriented and doesn't need the ball as much. But I'm with you. I think just on pure talent, they will win a lot of games.
I do too.
Brown and Tatum, we do this thing where guys, we expect linear development and it doesn't happen. And then we get down on them. Like one of those guys is going to pop this year. I don't know which one. One of them is going to pop. So I think they're going to be really good, but I agree with you. We haven't talked about Smart. Like where does Smart figure into the closing lineup? He's probably not going to start. Where does he figure in? There's an argument, by the way, that he should start and maybe one of the ball dominant guys should come off the bench. Just how do you prevent next season from turning into last season? Beyond Kemba is a much more cheerful personality than the guy who left.
By the way, all your questions are, this is why I'm excited for this season. More excited than I've been in recent seasons is I'm going to thoroughly enjoy watching kind of the assembly of the puzzle that is the Boston Celtics in the first 6 weeks of the season. I think all of these questions are fascinating, including the Smart question. Defensively, again, I mean, God, Kanter. It's a calculating
game. I would keep my eye on Robert Williams. I think they're going to give him a chance, and it wouldn't even blow me away if they gave him a chance to start.
Really?
I keep coming back to that is like, why not? Even if it's a Keith Bogans 4 minutes and you're out, and here comes Kanter, or here comes Tice, or here comes the French guy that's coming over. I don't know who's, I just feel like he's going to get a chance. Because I just don't see the utility of Kanter playing with all those guys.
It'll be Mark Iveroni to Enes Kanter's Thurl Bailey.
I guess.
Yeah.
What else about Boston intrigues you? It's a big year for Brad Stevens.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I mean, we've had the Stevens conversation at length, right? I mean, I think, you know, in some ways he might be the kind of the parable of maybe coach gets too much credit when things are going great, too much blame when things go poorly and just, you know, and also to me, it's been that conversation I just think I've been having with everybody, I feel like, which is, you know, that crisis of faith I'm having with the culture stuff. Like, does it even really exist? I mean, if culture is so precarious and so fragile that like, you know, that even the mighty, you know, sort of Brad Stevens, what they built in Boston is so susceptible and vulnerable to it, is it meaningful? Or is culture a 3-game winning streak, as Daryl Morey once said?
I think it's meaningful. It's not as meaningful as having a superstar player.
Right.
But Daryl Morey's team had a ruinous culture last year and they had to wrench away a big part of it again and reach away to get another big part that may or may not fit well. To me, Yeah, you know,
I've written more in about culture than anybody. Like, I am a culturalist, but I have to say, but my point is, what you're saying is true. It's not as important. Like, basically, the presence of a superstar can trump or corrode or elevate or is more powerful than the collective culture that either existed before he got there or while, then it does. It's less important than I've believed it to be between the years of 2012 and 2007.
But I do think, I think case A of proof that it matters is Portland. And how has Portland been able to remain, beat the Vegas odds every year, remain a constant, really good team? Now you can laugh, oh, was it last year was sort of, they got a great draw, they made the call, whatever. They made the conference finals. They won 50 games. They made whatever they won. They made the conference finals. They're good every year. There's roster turnover here. There's luxury tax issues. They're good every year. And Damian Lillard and the culture he sets is a big part of that. And this is an interesting year because they're bringing in Hassan Whiteside, who was a malcontent, and the Heat could not wait to get him off of their team. And there are expectations that last year in Portland, that last year's conference finals run was not a fluke. Yeah, it's repeatable.
We will be talking about Portland.
What actually makes a better toothbrush? Is it industrial strength power? Claims of miraculous trendy ingredients? Multiple modes? If you ask your dentist, they'll tell you it's less about the brush and more about how you use it. That's why Quip was created by dentists and product designers to focus on what actually matters for your oral health. Healthier brushing habits. Quip's sensitive vibrations that have a built-in timer, they guide gentle brushing for the dentist recommended 2 minutes with 30-second pulses, ensuring an even clean that tell you switch sides. Quip automatically delivers brush heads to you every 3 months for clean new bristles right on schedule. That's important because you're not going to remember to do that on your own. The sleek, intuitive design is simple to use and comes with a travel cap that doubles as a mirror mount. Handy. These thoughtful features make brushing something you actually want to do twice every day. Imagine that. Good habits matter to live a healthier life, so help form fresh oral health habits with Quip. Quip starts at just $25, and you get your first refill pack free at getquip.com/low, my last name, the name of this podcast. That's getquip.com/low for your first refill pack free. getquip.com/low. I'm going to pivot from the usual protocol and go right to my list because I have a team that if we don't get to
it. Wait, that is the protocol.
No, usually I let you go for two or three.
No, is it really?
It's my show. I know the protocols. My number one ranked most confusing team. Did I maybe juice the rankings to make sure we talked about this team? Maybe. But on my list, the number one team is the Golden State Warriors.
Okay.
Did they make your list?
They did not make the list and they should have. And now that you mentioned it, I'm like, oh yeah, they're really confusing.
So, on the one hand, if you, like me, have said Stephen Curry is closer to being the best player in the league than the seventh best player in the league, and you are a Draymond Green true believer, like I am, it should almost not even matter who else is on the team. They should be a playoff lock, even in a loaded Western Conference, and if Klay Thompson comes back in a timely fashion, a threat to beat anybody in a seven-game series. The Klay thing is hard to project, okay? And yet, I find myself looking at the Western Conference and how freaking loaded it is. I find myself chastised by doubting the Spurs last season, worried that I'm doubting Portland again this season, a little higher on Dallas than most people are, a little higher on a couple other borderline playoff teams than most people are, and wondering, is there a world, and not just the cop-out like, oh, if Curry sprains his ankle and misses 25 games, or not just that, is there a world where they miss the playoffs? Is that a crazy question to you?
I'm going to say crazy. I think if they're healthy, and I know that's the annoying caveat, but if they're healthy, I think it's so improbable.
Here's what makes me nervous. Can I tell you what makes me nervous?
You're saying if they get good health out of both of those guys,
I think they are going to make the playoffs.
Okay.
Let me just say that. I'm going to pick, when I list my eight playoff teams, which I will do, they are going to be on it. I get nervous when teams, no matter how good their top end talent is, have to play a lot of bad NBA players.
It's funny you're saying, I'm looking at the list, right?
It's here's their starting lineup. Curry, Russell. I don't worry about the redundancies on offense at all. No. I think Russell will have a really good year there. And if you can shoot and you're playing with Curry and Draymond Green, you're going to have a good year. Now, how they distribute who has the ball and all that, we'll see. Curry, Russell, Draymond, Looney, presumably at center. I am of the school of thought that Looney's maybe a little overrated. He's got the Warriors pixie dust sprinkled on him, whatever. Who's the fifth guy? It's like Alphonso McKinney or Damian Lee is going to get a look, maybe, or Alec Burks or Glenn Robinson the third. And like, those are starters. That means all those other guys are like coming off the bench. That's scary. That's scary to me. Now, it's scary even if I looked up the numbers. Are you ready for a good stat?
I'm ready.
Last three seasons, Steph Curry and Draymond Green on the floor, Durant and Klay Thompson on the bench. Best facsimile I could come up with for what this is going to be like. Plus 167 in 715 minutes, equivalent to plus 11 per 48 minutes. That's just ridiculous. Yes. That suggests to me that those two guys are so good. Do you want to hear some of Curry's stats from those minutes? Per 36 minutes? Here's two seasons ago. This is according to NBA.com. I almost think it has to be wrong. Klay and Durant off the floor, Steph and Draymond on the floor. 45 points per 36 minutes two seasons ago for Curry. 43 points per 36 minutes last year. I think he's going to win the scoring title. Forget the MVP. I think Curry's going to win the scoring title.
I think, again, 66 games, MVP and scoring title.
So you're not worried. I guess.
I'm worried because, again, as you say, the margin for error, given the lack of depth, is startling.
How much is their defense going to suffer? Curry and Russell and question mark guy like Draymond. Here's the thing. Draymond can't lose 25 pounds in March this year. It's got to be every game, 100% balls to the wall, Draymond Green. Steph Curry's got to bring it every game. Every game in the West is tough. Phoenix will put up a respectable game this year. These guys have been to the five finals in a row and are coming off 3 years in which they could just loaf every regular season game. They can't do that. They have to play every game. Are they ready to do that? Are they mentally ready to do that? Are they physically ready to do that? I believe that they probably are because I respect those guys so much. But I am less convinced that they're a stone cold like lock for the playoffs than most people.
Yeah, I'm still in lock territory again for every reason you said. I suppose one could have pause. Draymond got paid. If he were still going into that contract year, maybe there's creative incentive. Are they vulnerable to complacency? Not the complacency of a champion, but just sheer emotional exhaustion from the last several years. Or does Durant's departure almost motivate this kind of secondary run? And we talked about culture. I think Curry and Green are too preternaturally competitive for it to look. Now, look, I think the load management's gonna be an issue, and there are gonna be nights. Look, Curry can't play 82 games. He can't play 70.
How are they gonna score when Curry's on the bench?
That's the question.
Which was a problem when they had everyone.
Is it hang in there till late February when Klay comes back, and then we can give you every third game? I don't know. I mean, the load question, given the depth, is an issue. But I still think, God, I just think they're going to be 50 games that they just win.
And look, we saw it as recently as the finals, which was played other than 13 minutes or whatever it was without Durant, and some of it was played without Klay. Without the Klay piece is huge for them, on both ends of the floor. But there were still stretches where it's like you would look out there and it'd be like Curry, Livingston, Iguodala, Looney, and like someone else who wasn't Draymond. Like no one could shoot except Curry. And he'd still be creating easy buckets for them because he draws three guys and everyone else is a pretty good passer and they bing, 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 bing. And so you do have faith. The drop off from their top three, the drop off from two to three is depending on what you think of Russell, maybe big. From Russell to everyone else is like, I got to count on Willie Cauley-Stein. Like I like the idea of Willie Cauley-Stein. Well, he's a lob guy. They've had good, you know, rim runs. Maybe he can switch a little bit more on defense than the Kings let him. I like the idea of him. The reality of him is he had no offers around the league for a reason.
Well, there'll be some buyout help at some point, right? I mean, come March. But again, if you have to ask the question, it supports your thesis. If you have to ask the question, if I'm sitting here saying, yeah, there'll be some buyout help to help with the depth, then you got problems.
By the way, I haven't even been to the Chase Center yet, and I'm like just preemptively annoyed by it. I'm already annoyed by it. I'm annoyed by the tours. I'm annoyed by the here are the bells and whistles. I'm just annoyed.
I'm somebody who disliked Oracle so much that, I mean, I've bitched about it on this show incessantly. So
when I will stop being annoyed is when I can walk from my hotel in San Francisco to the game. Then I'll be like, okay, I get it. I'm in. Yeah. Small detail on the Warriors. My favorite protected pick of the whole season is the Warriors pick that they owe Brooklyn from the Durant sign and trade thing, whatever happened with Durant and D'Angelo Russell. Top 20 protected. That is a devilishly fun number when you consider that if the Warriors make the playoffs, it's almost impossible for them to keep their pick because you could argue that like maybe only two Eastern Conference teams finish with a better record than the eighth seed. So you start to do the math, you get to 10. It's like a juicy little subplot to the season. And the Nets are going to be rooting really hard to get that pick because if they don't get it, it converts to a 2025 second round pick. I don't know that I've ever seen a pick like that.
5 year delay.
5 year delay second. And you get one shot at it and the math is really tight and then it becomes a second round pick. Very interesting. Okay. Back to your list. Kevin Arnott, who's the second most confusing team?
You teased it. It's the Portland Trailblazers.
Not on my list. I told you.
For this reason. And this is my confusion. It's not that I think they're confusing. So, you know, I have a deal of reverence for advanced stats, and, you know, 538's Carmelo projection has the Blazers at 40 and 42. Our friend Kevin Pelton has them just shy of 41 wins. So, now, here's what we know. That I've always been an Al-Farouq Aminu guy, and even Harkless last year, though his shooting was poor from distance, both of those guys, I think, were the upper quartile or quintile in, you know, RPM and real plus minus at their position. So they were contributing. And I'm just trying to figure out what is it that these projections are seeing. And they're unemotional. And you know, Pelton even had the caveat that, look, this is a team that has overperformed its projection every single year. To your point, that is culture. Who knows what else? But the point I'm confused about is what am I missing? What deficiencies are these metrics identifying? Is it Nurkic's absence and Whiteside coming in? But here's what we know about Hassan Whiteside. Like, he's really tight with Dame and CJ. Like, has dinner with them when he's in town. Like, if ever, and we've heard about this from guys like Bob Myers for years, right? Which is, look, one of the benefits of having a good culture is you can acquire a guy that everybody else thinks is a malcontent, and because you have a culture, you can absorb it and he contributes. So, what is it that these metrics are seeing, Zach Lowe, that I'm not seeing? Because I look at the Portland Trailblazers, and yeah, I know that they're down some. They had used to have a surfeit of kind of three fours, and now they have not enough.
None of them.
And that is a problem. And maybe that's what they're seeing, that there is positional need. I mean, Bazemore is smaller. Hood is not. You know, these guys are they're twos disguised as threes at times, but they're really twos. Is that what they're seeing? Because I still see a hyper competent team that understands how to orchestrate 100 possessions a game of offensive basketball that will tread water defensively and will produce 47 to 50 wins. Like, they're the new Spurs in my book. The Blazers are the new Spurs. Like, I'm just confident that there's durability and fluency and culture and enough of all those things that say, we will win 48 games because we are a competent basketball team.
I think what you're seeing is Lakers, Clippers, Jazz, Nuggets, Rockets.
Say nothing of the Warriors.
Say nothing of the Warriors. Five teams that I think are on paper just better. Then you include the Warriors. Then you include the Spurs. Okay, because the Spurs always have to be included now by law. The Spurs are in.
I've seen
or that. In the conversation.
I wrote the damn bill.
Then you have everyone's got one team of the next group of the Pelicans, the Mavericks, the Timberwolves, whatever, the Kings that you like better than everyone else. And the math just gets tight. Nurkic is way better than Whiteside. I think Whiteside's going to put up huge numbers, by the way. He's just going to get offensive rebounds. Everyone doubles the guards and he feasts.
And Nurkic is another guy like Harkless and Aminu who just rates really well on these metrics. And if he's missing from the equation, the win total goes down.
The difference between Nurkic and Whiteside is when Damian Lillard throws a pocket pass to Yusuf Nurkic 20 feet from the basket, he can do something with the ball. Whiteside is incredibly laborious. He does not pass. I'm not sure what he's going to be able to do in those situations. Cantor got just barely good enough at it. You know, those side pick and rolls where there's no one on that side. He like just barely good enough at making the next play that they could limp in.
It was still deliberate, though. I mean, yeah.
And like Whiteside's another level of slow. He might also want to shoot like mid-range jumpers. That was always his dream in Miami, is just jack mid-range jumpers every game. But to your point, they have point guards, shooting guards, and centers. Really, that's what their team is. You can quibble about what Hood and Bazemore are, whatever. They have point guards, shooting guards, and centers. And I include Zach Collins because I do think he projects as a five. He can, he's good enough to play. I like Zach Collins. He's good.
There's some skill there, right? Like that man can play the four. He can play the four against certain matchups.
And I wrote a whole thing on Zach Collins before game seven of the Denver-Portland game. So Portland soccer moms, as Simmons called him, don't tell me I hate Zach Collins. There are a whole laudatory thing about him. Other than that, you got your Anthony Tollivers, you got your Mario Hezonjas. God bless him. I wish you were good.
I was thinking I gave you an opportunity to talk about Hezonja.
Even Simons, who everyone is incredibly excited for, and I am not educated enough to tell you how good he's going to be this year. He's another guard. Like they have this emptiness in the positional spectrum that makes me a little bit nervous.
Which is so ironic because, right, for years it was, God, these guys have these 3-4 hybrids, like in spades.
So I get your confusion. To me, I think they are at risk of missing the playoffs. I haven't decided if I'm going to pick them to make the playoffs. I feel fidgety saying that because, again, they win 6 more games than anyone expects them to win every year.
Every year.
So I don't know. Sometimes for inspiration, you just have to look up. My wife and I were just in Europe, and I said the most underrated thing that you can do is look up when there's all sorts of cool stuff up. For more than 60 years, the Goodyear blimp. Blimps are cool, has fueled greatness on the gridiron by providing aerial coverage of some of the most legendary moments in college football history. When the Goodyear blimp rises above a stadium, it inspires players to reach higher and rise to the challenge of the game's biggest moments. Now it's your turn to go further with Goodyear. Discover tires made to rise above the rest. Learn more at Goodyear.com. Goodyear, more driven. I think my spidey senses are telling me that the next team on your list, team number 3, is one of the teams on my list. So I'm going to take a risk, and I'm going to go back to you for your third most confusing team.
All right, my third most confusing teams is the San Antonio Spurs.
Not on my list! My God! Okay, go.
Well, I mean, it's the same. I mean, I'm probably stealing from, I mean, last year, which is, and again, maybe it's just a function of having hung around the league too long, which is, they're three primary scorers.
I'm already bored listening to you talk about DeMar DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge. I'm bored. I changed the channel already to the Kings game to watch De'Aaron Fox running. Like, no, talk about them.
No,
it's fine.
No. It's like what is identity, right? Like this is just like the Spurs have ceased being the Spurs in every possible respect. Like it's throw it to LaMarcus on the left block. It's DeMar. By the way, all these guys are really good at it. DeMar is like the second in points per chance among the high ISO players in the league, of which he ranks third. LaMarcus is second in post off and third per chance. Rudy is like top 10 in efficiency in ISOs.
Rudy Gay had a crazy year last year.
Like, so I applaud the Spurs. They can create better percentage shots for low percentage shooters better than any system. But it has ceased to be the Spurs as we know it. Can we just say that it is over? And I don't mean that in a defeatist sense. It's just stylistically, this is the team that beat everybody with the pass. And I turn on Spurs basketball, and it's just a different product. And I understand.
Unless the bench is playing. Which is one of the reasons they're confusing, is that last year they exceeded max. Yeah. When Murray went out, I was like, well, they're really in trouble. Then White went out, and I was like, oh my God, they're in enormous trouble.
I love Derek White too.
Well, so we can get to that in a second, but they were not one of my teams, so I didn't do a deep dive on them, but they were negative, I believe, with DeRozan and Aldridge on the floor together and walloped everybody when Mills and Bellinelli and Bertans were running around. Is that replicable? Can you do that again? Maybe you can. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, not with Bertans, obviously, but like, it's just, I just miss it. I just miss it. I miss watching the Spurs because I'm just not somebody, and I'm a big DeMar DeRozan fan individually, but I just don't tune in anymore.
Someone asked me in the league, what would you pay? Because, he's an interesting contract extension candidate. It would be a very Spursy thing to do of like, let's just stay afloat for a while, extend this like guy who's like literally a human flotation device for your team. Like he's just, you know.
Who are you talking about?
DeMar DeRozan.
Oh, DeMar DeRozan, okay.
I would run away so fast from that contract extension. So someone asked me, so what would you pay him? What would you pay DeMar DeRozan? What's a fair salary for him? And I said, I don't even think that's a fair question for me because he will immediately reach a market value that I would never pay. Like, it depends what kind of team you're trying to build.
What do you want
to
do?
If you want to win 45 games, he's awesome. If you want to win a championship, at the rate you're going to pay him, you should just get out of the conversation because you're going to have to pay 25 to 30 million to get him on your team. If you tell me I could get him for the mid-level and I'm trying to win a championship, sure, but that's just not how the market works. So I'm just out of the whole conversation.
Again, what do you want to do? By the way, very excited for the delayed DeJounte Murray season though. I mean,
I hope we get it because those guys don't talk anybody up there and they were talking him up in September and August last year. They don't let that kind of stuff out. And they were saying, wait till you see him play.
I know, I remember.
I
really hope we get a chance to do it because it's really the reason I'll tune into the Spurs. Because if he's not there,
So they have an interesting question right off the bat. Who do they start? Now, you could tell me that it's irrelevant. It only matters who finishes the game. So fine, who finishes games? But, like, do Murray, DeRozan, and White all fit together? Is there enough size on the wing defensively? And is there enough shooting on the perimeter offensively? Because those three guys all are saying, I'm a starter. I'll bet you they don't start all three of them. I bet you they start four.
I mean, the one nice thing that Murray gives you is the ability to start him irrespective of the size of the other perimeters because he is just so spidery. Like, he's a guy who, now, I think it's going to take some time, but he's a guy who could truly, he can guard a three. I mean, because there are no threes, right? I mean, a three is either a four or a two. I mean, I just feel like Murray gives you defensive flexibility. Now, I am with you. I don't know that they'll start all three, but Murray, that's one of the things we love about him is he does afford you that flexibility.
I could see them bringing White off the bench as sort of he fills every gap. He fits in every lineup. We'll start Bryn Forbes. He's a shooter.
Because Murray is not.
Yeah. Well, maybe I don't think Murray's going to shoot threes. I think even the optimistic Murray projection was he's going to have a nice mid-range jumper, this year. Now, long term, I kind of like their team. I like. We'll see what Damari Carroll has left in the tank, but I just don't think you can have enough of those 3.5 guys who can shoot, you know, guys that are between or tweeners. And they just win games.
They'll get in the playoffs.
If they're getting in the playoffs,
someone's
in trouble. If they and the Warriors are both getting in, someone's in trouble.
Who weren't an attendee last year. So yeah.
But I strangely like their team. The dependence on the bench last year makes me a little bit nervous, but maybe the starters will put up a little bit better numbers this year. DeRozan did get more comfortable as the year went on and they allowed him to stop shooting threes entirely. I haven't given up on Trey Lyles. Apropos of nothing, I haven't given up on Trey Lyles.
I've paid no attention in recent years or since the trade.
Okay. The Spurs are, I get it. All of these teams are a little confusing. And then that perimeter logjam, they have interesting questions to answer. But they win games. They just win games. They don't beat themselves. They win games. I'm going to go to the number two team on my list. You know what? I'm going to skip right ahead and go to the number three team on my list. Skip at number two.
Is number three less confusing than number two?
I just think they're
just
more
like the thematic.
They're more interesting and they have better uniforms and they play in a better city.
Okay.
The number three team on my list is the Miami Heat.
Okay.
Did it make your list?
They almost made my list.
Oh my God. We have not had
They're on my
over
list
that.
Every year though. So I think that was kind of part of it.
I just don't know what to make of them. I don't know what to make of them. They have Injustice Winslow and James Johnson and Derrick Jones Jr. Three big threes to four, you know, small forwards, power forwards, whatever you want to call them now. I mean, James Johnson's obviously more of a four, so I think is Derrick Jones Jr. But three bigger guys who, whether you believe Justice Winslow's shooting from last year or not, he's going to have to prove it. They have two shooting fives in Myers Leonard and Kelly Olynyk who are going to have to play some with Bam. We don't even know if Dragic is starting anymore. They're huge. They're weird. And they have a sort of a just minute by minute challenge of how do we get enough defense and size on the floor without compromising our shooting? And it goes both ways. Like when they go small and Bam is the center. Okay. So what's your small ball lineup? Is it Butler, Dragic, Winslow, Johnson, Bam. Does that have enough shooting? It's very, they're a very interesting team.
This is the weirdest menagerie.
It's a very strange team.
I mean, first of all, are you cool with Winslow at the point if it comes to that?
But if they bring Dragic off the bench, which they might, yeah. I think the three set starters on their team are Butler, Winslow, and Bam. And the other two positions are open. Waiters or Dragic will get one. Olynyk or James Johnson will get the other, I think.
You know, they might be a really good defensive team.
They could be.
I mean, could you see them rank like second, third defensive efficiency?
That's a little much. They were seventh last year, I think. The bottom line is this. Bam is by far their best defensive big.
Yes. That's what I'm thinking. It's like you talk Bam, Butler, Winslow. I'm just like, that is a defensive.
He's their best defensive big.
James Johnson, you know.
But if he's out there without Olynyk or Myers Leonard, let's just say Olynyk because he's going to be way ahead of Leonard in the rotation.
Yeah.
Do they have enough shooting? If he's out there with Olynyk, can they defend? Now, the numbers last year were very good. They were plus five per 100 possessions with Olynyk and Bam on the floor.
I think Olynyk's one of those guys that, like, it's not as bad as it looks.
No, against starters, because every team still starts big, right? And so if you play those two together, what you would like ideally is for Bam to defend center. So he's around the rim. He can blow up pick and rolls, which means Olynyk, who's 7 feet tall and not that fleet of foot, has to guard stretch fours.
You have small ball fours, right?
But your starting stretch fours are such that he can survive.
Yeah.
When the teams go to their real lineups, that gets a little dicey.
And then, you know, the funny thing is like Winslow's. Yeah. Well, then and then you bring in James Johnson and you just make lemonade.
I like James Johnson. Always have.
You know, I just love him in defending the four. I like him as this is now a street fight and he is the four. And yeah, he's not a great shooter, but he'll move the ball. He can, you're right. It is a weird menagerie of players. All of whom I kind of like for a reason or two, right? There's nobody on this roster. I'm like, ugh. But you're right. It's just a weird assembly.
What do you think of the persistent rumblings and bumblings that they're interested in Chris Paul?
Depends what you want to accomplish. I mean, what do you want to,
you know what the Heat want to accomplish. Well, as long as Riles is there, they want to try to win. Win everything.
I mean, look, he would be an instant up. I mean, he would solve a lot of problems. Long term, they got what, 93 guaranteed next year. I mean, how do you construct the deal? I mean, what's attractive?
Well, I mean, I would be blown away if the Heat did not go through this season without making a significant trade because they have Dragic's $19 million expiring contract. They have a $12 million contract in Olynyk with a player option. That's attractive. I think Olynyk's pretty good.
It's decent. You know what? That is a good deal.
Waiters' contract, he's going to have to prove his health, but they have a bunch of, like, they can cobble 30 something million together of, depending on who they get back, non-essential for them players. Which is rare. Not a lot of teams can say, yeah, we have $35 million outgoing salary. That's A, non-essential to us. B, not crippling to you. Give us your big money player who's like maybe a little bit crippling to you, but still pretty good. Like that's a hard trade to make.
All right, let's do it from the OKC's perspective. And let's say there's not a third team.
They're going to demand an asset. They're going to say we got two picks and two swaps for Russell Westbrook. We need an asset. We need something. And that's where.
I mean, they can say it, but all right, look, the truth is they want off that money. I mean, the asset is you no longer have big crooked numbers in your spreadsheet extending forward for Chris Paul. You're getting Goran, and it's off the books next year. You're getting, let's say, Olynyk, and oh, by the way, it's not over.
And by the way, and the Heat,
you get a pick. You're getting a pick.
They do have a first to trade. I can't remember which one it is. They owe 21 and they owe 23. So I think technically they could trade 2 years after the 23 pick, whatever that is.
So, okay, so you would have to wait till 25, which they might be.
I believe the Heat have traded like 6 second round picks in a row. So they've got none of those. Olynyk may be the one that the Thunder have to talk themselves into is like, that's our asset. Because I don't think they're giving up Justice Winslow for Chris Paul. I could see them giving up Justice Winslow for other players who may become available, but not for Chris Paul. By the way, I'm not reporting that. That's just an educated guess.
We're spitballing here, but would they rather part with a first rounder or Justice Winslow? The 2025 first or Justice Winslow. If you're Miami, that's what's standing between you and what you envision March basketball in Miami looking like. Would you rather part with Justice Winslow or the 2025 first round
pick? I bet the pick. Yeah, I bet fair. I'd rather keep Justice Winslow because I then have his salary still around to help me in trades later.
Yeah, because it's a good contract.
And by the way, he's also a good player. Yeah. He's also become quite a good player. So just to say you traded for Chris Paul. So the summer of 2021 is what everyone is targeting, right? That's when all the guys are up, yeah. Giannis on down. And the Heat get in rooms with people. You can say whatever you want. The Heat will get you in a room. They'll get you to freaking Prime 120 on South Beach. They'll get you in a room. Is it Prime 120? Did I say that right? I've been there.
It's Prime some other number.
Okay, so it's a Prime
110.
A Prime restaurant. Fine.
I should know this.
They get you in a room is what I'm saying. Riley dumps the rings out. You fall for the bit, the whole thing. Butler and Paul together in 2022, which would be the relevant cap year, make $80 million. Ryan Anderson is stretched. There's 85. There's another five. That's $85 million. Even if you had no one else on the team, just those three guys, you're up to $95 million in guaranteed
salary.
If you
pick up Winslow's option.
Forget it. You trade everyone. You trade Tyler Hero. You've traded everyone else. You do not have room for a max offer. Just those three guys. So if they trade for Chris Paul, they need to retain other stuff that they can use in a sign and trade for whoever they want to try and get that summer, which is mechanically possible, but it does make your life a little harder.
They are confusing. That is a good pick.
If they're one of many teams in the Eastern Conference. If they could get Kyle Lowry, I would be really excited about their team. You think Kyle Lowry extends in Toronto?
God, that's a good question.
I think there's a chance. I think there's a chance. A chance.
Depends what he wants.
At his age,
I think he wants one more contract.
At his age, if they gave him 3 years, 75, you got to think hard about that. Even though you're taking an annual pay cut.
I'm dying to see what Toronto does come mid-season, and let's say they are sixth in the East. What do you do? And it's fairly clear you're sixth in the East without much of a puncher's chance getting past two dominant teams, whichever two they happen to be. What do you do? And they're not one of my confusing teams, by the way.
Masai Ujiri does not operate under a lot of sentimentality.
No. Bless his heart.
If you can get something good for those guys, I just think practicality dictates that you do it. Because I don't think Gasol or Lowry is going to have more value on his next contract than he does now on an expiring contract.
The thing about the NBA, though, is it's not baseball. Like, the idea of the late season rental, the Fred McGriff, just, we see year after year, what do you get for Lowry midseason? And I don't mean this is an indictment on Kyle. Like, it just, has not been a rental market in this league.
Let's just say it out loud. Kyle, you can get a first. You can get something. There are guys who have been traded midseason for a bad first round pick, a lottery top 20 protected first round pick.
Okay.
You will get one asset for Kyle Lowry. One. You will get Justice Winslow at the absolute max of that's the best you're going to get, or a pick. I don't even know if you'd get Justice Winslow. I don't even know if you would.
You think they trade for 2 months of Kyle Lowry in Miami? They trade.
I'm not sure they would. I'm saying if they could get, then maybe it's Dragic and something else and a protected 2025 pick. That's all you're going to get. But you get something. It's better than nothing.
Right.
By the way, can I just say, did you read the Mitch Kupchak, James Borrego exclusive interview with the Charlotte Observer?
I did not.
I just don't know. You need to read it tonight.
Okay, I'm putting this in my pocket.
They do this interview in order to essentially to explain themselves. It's their version of the Steve Mills statement of on July 1st, like the record setting, we screwed up free agency statement. Like it set the land speed record for quickest, like it's not even July 2nd yet and we're already sending out a press release. Kupchak says on the record, Kevin Artovitz, that they were blindsided by Kemba Walker making the All-NBA team and becoming eligible for a Supermax, which is a lie. It's a lie. It's either a lie or you're so bad at your job that you need to be fired on the spot.
I hope it's a lie, because if it's not a lie, that's the worst transgression.
Then He says, why didn't you just trade him? If you know you're not going to offer him this money, why didn't you just trade him? He said, well, Kupchak again says on the record, well, the best offers we got were lottery protected first round picks. We didn't think that was worth it. Okay. You know what that's better than? Nothing. It's better than nothing. It's better than Terry Rozier at $18 million a year. It's better than nothing. And more to the point, two seasons ago, they could have traded Kemba Walker for something better than a lottery protected first round pick. I'm pretty sure Cleveland would have given them the number eight pick in the draft that became Sexton. So like as an aside, I read that and I was like, this is insane. This is insane. This is on the record. This is just, it's embarrassing. Anyway, enough Charlotte talk. They're not confusing at all.
No, there's nothing confusing about that, right? They were not a contender for this list.
I'll just say this. I like Miami. I'm excited about Miami.
I think it'd be a really good defensive ball club.
If Dragic is healthy and could make a prerequisite amount of catch and shoot threes, I think they're interesting. I think Butler is invigorated by being the guy. Now he's a guy that as the guy is only going to take you so far,
yeah,
but maybe further than they've gotten in the last few years. And I think Spo is reinvigorated by having a guy. I think their whole democratic dribble handoff, this and that, it ran its course. It's time to have a guy again.
No, it's the, you know, Quinn Snyder, your problem. I mean, at some point, creativity is wonderful and invigorating in and of itself, and it gets exhausting at just the same.
Also, very excited for Bam.
You were a Bam.
I love Bam.
You're a Bamophile.
I want to see Bam do stuff, like a lot of stuff. Okay, give me another team on your list. We're going back to your list. Okay. I just needed to get the Heat. I needed
done
to talk
three,
Heat.
You've done two.
Yeah, I just needed
you
to talk Heat.
Your second though. Okay, I have the Brooklyn Nets.
Okay, I don't have them.
I have the Brooklyn Nets. I want to lead with the good news, right? Like I'm excited for this organization and for all the things that have been said, and that nothing of this is original. It's not just that they signed marquee players, right? Like they have been developing late first rounders, LeVert and Jared Allen. They have been developing second rounders in Dinwiddie. They have been finding undervalued reclamation projects like Joe Harris, and now they're going to try with Torian Prince. This has been a very good organization the last few years after being, let us not forget, an absolute laughing stock that was fleeced by the Boston Celtics. And it's good to see. I think that one of the nice things about having a young guy who is improving by the day on your roster, who you're paying a little more than $6 million over two seasons to, is that you don't have to sign a 31-year-old center to a four-year deal.
Well, you do if his friends tell you to.
That's the thing. And by the way, I like DeAndre. Like, but he's a 31-year-old center who doesn't have range. And you have a guy that is just like it and I guess that's the if it's a condition, it's a condition, right?
He should have played last season with a postal bag over his shoulder. He was mailing it in so badly.
It was pretty bad.
It was embarrassing.
It was bad. And I typically like
a satchel. A satchel with envelopes overflowing out of it.
But I'm a little sad because like I kind of this is one of those Stockholm syndrome teams. Like I know I Clipper friends who there was something when like Eric Gordon and Alvaro Camino were traded to, you know, for Chris Paul, there was like this trace of sadness, right? Cause it wasn't really the Clippers anymore. Now it was a team that acquired mercenaries. But I'm a little sad. I'm not so much confused. I'm excited for the Nets. They're going to be an important, relevant team for a very long time. It is long overdue in a wonderful borough of New York, but I'm gonna miss, like I'm confused about my emotions because I'm gonna miss the thing they were building. And I realize the goal in the NBA is to win a championship, not to delight your fans and spectators with overachievers who play with grit and heart and win a single game in the first round of the playoffs. But it is just, we go back to that culture thing, it's sort of like, okay, I mean for all the stuff they were building in, you're not building a culture. You're building a resume to put in front of a superstar so that you can acquire him no matter how little the superstar has demonstrated they're in themselves a culture broker. And I just think it's interesting. Like maybe Kyrie's going to be great there and maybe it's going to be beautiful and maybe they make the conference finals or semifinals or show themselves, acquit themselves well this season, and then next year with Durant, it all puts together. Maybe it is, but I'm going to miss the old Brooklyn Nets project. Though I am happy for the organization that they got what they want.
It is going to be weird to watch them this season and have to remind yourself in the back of your head that that guy's coming, that the 7-foot guy with the silky jump shot who can score from all over the floor, some version of that is coming. I'm less interested in them as a basketball team in 2019-2020 than I am as a what is their next move team, because I think on paper – I'm pretty confident that the Nets are what they are, which is like a nice playoff team, like a 45-win team. I don't think they're a special team without Durant. I just think they're – so I'm not – I didn't find them confusing in that regard. But they have a lot of interesting decisions to make. Notably, do we – they're one of the rare teams that went out and got two star free agents and have a lot of trade assets left over. Do you cash those in for a third star? I think they'll look hard at some of those things. They also, interestingly, now they may not care because they have Durant waiting in the wings, but you go through it. Brooklyn, Boston, Utah, Portland. There are a lot of teams with big, big, big ambitions this season and a giant hole at power forward. And there are going to be a lot of available power forwards, starting with Kevin Love, but you'll have everyone that the Knicks signed. 7 of them, whatever.
You know why everybody has a hole?
Yeah, the Knicks got all of them. Everyone Orlando's got. Davis Bertans, Jay Crowder. Like, one of these teams with these players is going to be smart by trading them early, by getting ahead of it to a team that starts off badly and is desperate and getting more value than they would by waiting, because there's more of those guys than there are teams that need them, but there are a lot of teams that need them, including Brooklyn. I'm not that confused by Brooklyn, but yeah, we'll see how they do.
Yeah, it is actually. It's funny you say. I mean, there are a lot of trade chips there.
They have all their picks. No, they owe one pick. I'm sorry, they owe a pick to the Hawks. They have the Warriors weirdo pick that we talked about. They have a Sixers pick that they're going to get this year. LeVert's a trade asset. You know, I don't know what Taurean Prince will become.
What do you think of Cruz?
Kuroot has some legal problems to sort out.
Oh, yeah.
Dinwiddie is a trade asset. Allen's a trade asset. Imagine being Jared Allen. You might lose your starting spot because this dude is friends with the other
That's
guys.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's something just, I know, look, if that was the condition, if that was a true condition, but like, it just kind of, and I love what Jared Allen tried to do last year. I mean, guy works really hard.
You know, you know what I would really be interesting is,
I don't mean to be precious.
DeAndre Jordan's a good player. Like, I don't know if he was a good player last year. He has been a good NBA player who made lots of money.
And by the way, himself, like, was one of those guys.
And is not making, by NBA standards, some obscene amount of money on this contract.
No, and actually it's like drops below 10, I think.
I wonder what would happen. I have a feeling I know what would happen. If some team tried to sign Giannis's other brother to like a 2-year, $6 million contract. That would be interesting. I think the league would be interested in that contract, because it's just like, when do these favors become like unreasonable favors? Like, when do they become less, like, when do they become cap circumvention, essentially? This was not a case of that, obviously, but I'm just saying, I'm not interested in the Nets. People, do you ever feel like ticketing websites make getting to the event difficult on purpose? It's as if they're so big and so unwieldy they can get away with not caring about the customer experience. But with millions of live ticket events and price match guarantees, SeatGeek has proven there is a better way. You can search for sports tickets, music tickets, comedy tickets. The NBA season is right around the corner. Go to your favorite NBA arena. SeatGeek has the tickets you're looking for all in one place. No more going to 17 secondary market sites. It's all on SeatGeek. They built the fastest way to find tickets. It has an easy-to-use rating system, color-coded. Green dots mean good deals. Red dots mean the deal might be overpriced. It rates every deal from 1 to 10. That's pretty easy to use. It has an interactive seat map. Every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets with confidence. I've used SeatGeek many times to buy tickets, including to Broadway plays and stuff. It's fast, it's easy, it saves you time. And SeatGeek right now will even give you $10 off your first purchase. All you need to do is use our promo code. So download the SeatGeek app today. Use promo code LOWE, L-O-W-E, my last name, the name of this podcast. Bam! $10 off your first purchase. That could be a decent percentage of a sporting event, a baseball game, a basketball game. That's promo code LOW for $10 off your first purchase with SeatGeek. Can we do one of my teams now?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you a pick.
Oh, wow.
You can pick Sacramento or you can pick Orlando as a confusing team. Pick one.
They were
numbers 2 and 4 on my list.
Let's go Sac, because I always enjoy talking Sac.
Sac won 39 games last year. They're going to be a sexy pick to make the playoffs this year. They had a negative point differential, which has been slightly exaggerated. I keep reading about their negative point differential. If you exclude garbage time, they essentially played to their record. Their record is representative of what they were as a team. They have the antithesis of the Warriors problem. The Warriors have the problem of playing bad players. The Kings have 11 to 12 legitimately solid NBA players. They're deep. And that's going to create lots of interesting possibilities for them. But I find them confusing because I don't think they know or can know what their best lineups are. And it is going to be very interesting to see how they sort out various positional log jams, starting with, do they get Bagley anytime at center? If they don't get Bagley anytime at center, does that mean Barnes is a three again, full time? If Barnes is a three, does that mean Bogdanovich comes off the bench all year long and doesn't play a lot of crunch? Like, they just have a lot of interesting questions.
I'm a fan of the work of Dwayne Dedman, Trevor Reeser, Corey Jones. Each of these individually I look at and say, okay, that's market value for that guy. That said, I don't always understand the rationale.
That Corey Joseph contract was a bad contract. That's not market value for a backup
point
guard.
Yeah, 2 years, 24, so yeah, for that's a backup too much. Point taken. I mean, he's a nice player. Wow. Let me throw out, here's my hottest take of the day.
Ooh.
All right. Provided you are a believer in Bogdanovich. I'm a believer in Bogdanovich.
Oh, you don't have to. I'm a believer. I'm a believer.
All right.
I'm a believer in both Bogdanoviches.
And you've got these log jams, and if Barnes is a three because you've basically loaded your roster with fours and fives, what could you get for Buddy Hield before you have to pay him? Well, I know they won't do it. I know
they're not going to trade Buddy
Hield. I know they would never do it, but I'm just saying play fantasy basketball.
It's more likely they max out Buddy Hield than it is that they –
I totally agree with you. I'm just saying, if you were the czar and the genie in the bottle and all that stuff, and you had unilateral control over a long-term strategy that makes sense for the Sacramento Kings, and your life depends on future success, what could you get for Buddy Hield, and will he ever be worth more than he is right this moment?
Probably not. Probably not. This is probably the peak of his value once he signs that next. I don't know what you could get. You could probably get a good young player and a pick. Like he has the most important skill in the league, and he's not just good at it. He is like non-Splash Brothers division record setting good at it.
He is a slinger, and it is beautiful to watch when it works.
So to your point though, there's a certain appeal in like, let's play Fox, Hield, Bogdanovich, Barnes, Bagley.
Yes.
Fox healed Bogdanovich last year was -5 per 100 possessions, and they got destroyed defensively with those guys on the floor. And I think that's like Bagley at center got destroyed defensively all season last year. And so I think they're going to try to toggle between these lineups that it's going to be hard for them to find the right. Like let's just lay it out. I think their starting lineup is probably Fox, Hield, Barnes, Bagley, Dedman. Interesting.
I think that makes sense.
It's an okay lineup. Off the bench, Joseph, Bogdanovich, Ariza, Bealitsa, Giles or Holmes, Rishon Holmes, whoever right. wins the backup center spot. Those are
the case of emergency, Yogi Ferrell.
Yeah. That second unit might have problems producing offense. I'd like to see them stagger Fox and Hield a little bit more than they did last year. How are they going to get to Bagley? If that's their rotation, how much center is Bagley going to get to play? Should he play any center at all? How much four is Barnes going to get to play? It's a very strange group. And to your point, I bet they have a lot of interesting trade possibilities this year, starting with Bogdanovich, who's eligible, sneaky eligible for an extension right now.
Yeah.
The veteran extension, but he can get 120% of his current salary, which takes him to like 12 and change. He's not going to take that. So he's eligible, but it's not real. I could see, like, I don't think it's crazy. What could they get for Harry Giles? Like, are there minutes for him? If there are not minutes for him and you don't have faith in him as a long-term partner for Bagley, now I don't think they've gotten there yet, but that's interesting. I just think there's a lot of, they're going to, if they were smart, to your point, if they were really smart, the guy they'd be trying to trade is Barnes. Because he's on a declining contract. It's not as big as you think. He signed this big extension this summer.
It goes down.
It goes down massively. I don't really, the whole is Harrison Barnes a three or a four thing, I actually think is a little overblown because he can shoot well enough to play on the wing. And like, I don't.
Oh, I think he's fine. It's really a question of what do you want on the floor.
Right. But
I think he's fine at both.
And every team in the league needs big wings. Like, this is why he was valuable in the Warriors, because he would just stand and shoot spot up threes and guard whatever position you asked him to. He can play that role still. You just have to swallow a salary that's
and
too
he'll
high.
Play it for less next year than this year and less than.
That's the guy they should be trying to trade. The guy that they are a stone cold lock to try to trade is Bealitsa. You just go through the rotation. He's getting squeezed. There's not, they can call him the backup four between Barnes and Bagley and the need to play Ariza because they paid him a lot of money. He's going to get squeezed. Like, he's pretty good.
I mean, look, if you had it to spin it, it's 1 year. I just don't quite understand the Ariza thing. It just gives me pause in terms of what they went out and did. But I like what it looks like. I love the personnel. This is one of my favorite. I watch more Sacramento Kings basketball than I do like.
Well, so, but here's an interesting question.
I also love the broadcast, by the way.
Oh, they're great.
I'm going to just tell the guy I love the
broadcast. Last year, the sheer speed of how they played caught a lot of teams off guard. Everybody knows that's coming this year. I think they were 24th in half court offense and like fifth in transition offense. They were, like the third best team in the league at taking care of the ball, at avoiding turnovers, and like the third best team in the league at forcing turnover. So they lived off of transition points, lived off of point. And like they would inbound the ball after makes. Fox would be over half court with 21 on the shot clock.
Drill. It was the best thing to watch on league pass last year.
Is that turnover differential fool's gold? Are teams going to be like, okay, now I know what's coming at me. Like, we're just not, we can't go to Sacramento in January and we're going to walk into a win and it's going to be easy. Like, I think they have some interesting questions to answer.
If it's Barnes, Bagley, Deadman, I suspect it might be a little slower.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. I mean, it's not like Bealitsa is. Bealitsa is useful, by the way.
Bealitsa is good. He's a good player. He started towards the end of the year. He's a good player. He started most of the year.
I mean, he helped them a great deal last year. It's a fun team. I'm gonna enjoy watching it.
I
love Giles. By the way, a team I like, trade for Giles. Please. Playmaking big men is just kind of my thing.
I'm confused by them, but I also think I would peg their win total right at where it was last year. I don't see a leap coming and I don't see a decline coming. I just think they're gonna be a nice solid team that misses the playoffs.
I would agree with that.
Have we hit four of your teams? Have we hit how many?
Yeah, we've hit four of my teams.
Then can we hit my other team?
Yeah, you have better teams.
Well, the two teams left on my list are New Orleans, who everyone's talked enough about them, and they're just like a brand new team. Like they're almost, it's just like they're just a brand new team. Let's see. Orlando.
Okay.
You were not curious about Orlando at all? Not even a candidate to get on your list?
Oh, Orlando. Land of the big men. Land of the giants. Land of the power forwards. Lands of the four or fives and the four or fives. I guess, sure. They're confusing. The personnel, it's one of those wacky teams with like positional gluts and positional holes and, but that's okay because they're still sort of finding themselves. I don't know. What's confusing about them?
Well, they're just a classic team of, like they made the playoffs, but I think they finished the year 20-8. And so is that real? Was that real? Was the 45 games that came before real, or was the hot start to the hot end to the season? They were the number two defense, I think, or number one defense after January 15th. Is that real? Can they score enough? They were 22nd in offense last season, and even in their hot streak, they were like 15th or 16th. Was the way they finished the season indicative of a 50-win team waiting to happen, or was it a little overblown, and they're sort of the same old mediocrity?
I think it's probably the latter through no lack of effort. I mean, I'm trying to, you know, I watch them in the playoffs. I mean, look, on a great night, it's a nice pick and roll attack with Augustine and Vooch. They're really athletic and long and bother teams defensively. And there were times they really bothered the Raptors in that series. And I covered that series. I just like, who on the wing is making a play for me? Because how do you get to be 24th in offense, even though you look around and say, there's some good personnel here, is can anybody on the wing create off the bounce? And I just think, you know, if the answer is, you know, Fournier, Gordon isn't really a wing, but he's got really athletic. It just, there's this there's not a lot. It's a very provisional offense, and the personnel is limited in terms of creation. And I just don't think a team with this lack of creation is ever going to sniff 50 games. I could be wrong. And by the way, I really like what's going on there. I like being around that team. I hope they're successful. Do you see the shot creation? Where do you see it on that roster, Zach?
Well, their starting wings will be Fournier and Gordon, as you said.
Okay, I mean,
I get what you're saying. Like, those guys ideally are, along with Isaac, are secondary ball. They're catch, pump, fake, and go. Gordon wants to be more than that, and he's a fascinating player in that regard. Fournier, it just hasn't seemed to happen in the NBA. Like, he's a nice player. It hasn't really happened. Isaac is a wild card.
You got Aminu now, who, by the way, another, you know, not a guy who's gonna, he's an anti-creator. He does so many great things for you. Frankly, things they already kind of do well. If ever there was a team that didn't need Al-Farouq Aminu in their 24 teams, who could desperately use Aminu, it's interesting that he ended up in a place where I think he's a little redundant.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see how they set the rotation. I mean, like, it was interesting to me that Clifford came out in the media last week and anointed Bamba the backup center and Kem Birch as the third stringer.
Or a sentence?
Well, I mean, my point is their bench was horrific and bleeding points until Bamba got hurt and Kem Birch stepped in and he didn't do it single-handedly. They had other players there, but like, what is their bench? Is it Fultz? When is Fultz playing?
That's the wild card. You ask, like, who's the creator? And the answer, I think they would like the answer to be by January 1 or February 28th. You know, the answer is Markelle Fultz. But I don't know.
DJ Augustine, I think, makes $7 million in change this year. That's a guy, if you went and offered him an extension off that number, 120% of that number, he'd have to think hard about taking it based on where he is in his career. I'm a little surprised I haven't heard any chatter of that being a possibility because unless they know something about Fultz, even beyond that they picked up his option, like, who's playing point guard for them next year? You think that, like, they would have some interest in at least, like, oh, this is a nice placeholder point guard, does a job for us. I'm surprised we haven't heard more of that. Yeah, to your point, those are secondary creators that are playing with a point guard who's not going to break the defense down enough to make their life easy. As secondary creators, I'm just intrigued because I do think Isaac has it just career trajectory. It's his third year; he should make a leap.
And I really like what I've seen.
I think Gordon has another gear to get to and another player to become. We can talk about that. I think their defense was real-ish.
Yeah.
I think it was. There's nothing in their in their numbers that screams. Teams did not shoot well on wide open threes against them, but they allow the right kinds of shots. They were not a huge outlier in open 3-point percentage against. I think their defense was like real ish.
Other than Augustine, they are enormous at every position. And just forget like the quality of size, like what size can, if you were 4 inches above normal at your, I mean, this is like the Kyle Korver rule. It's like every year Kyle would rate perfectly decent in defense, even plus. And people, well, that's not right. Advanced stats. And I was like, no, the guy's enormous. Like, they are enormous at every position other than point.
And that lineup worked last year. Now, it didn't work well in the playoffs, but Isaac, Gordon, Vucevic at 3-4-5 was like plus 2.5 per 100 possessions. It worked.
It defends my sensibilities, but it works. And you got to appreciate the practicality of that.
I think they're a really solid team. I don't know. I'm just curious about, do they have another... Do they have another, particularly on offense? Because offensively, it's just such, it looks pretty. They have a high assisted rate. The output just isn't very good. And this team is congenitally unable to get to the rim and congenitally unable to get to the foul line. They're always 28th, 29th, 30th in shots at the rim and foul shots. And it's hard to live that way. And it evinces what you're talking about. Just a lack of just. Can go. A lack of guys who just get it and go and make you feel it. They don't have that.
And I don't prescribe get it and go as a offensive system, but in a 101 possession game, that has to happen 18 to 24 times a night.
They need a little wildness to them that Steve Clifford's teams generally have not had, and Orlando certainly has. They need some pace. Some zip, some like fast break points. They need some offensive rebounds. They just need some MFers to go get to the foul line. They don't have it.
Yeah, and it's just like, look, there's certain teams you just watch and again, it's always well choreographed and well coached and decisions in isolation seem to be made well. But like, it's just a lot. Like when I watch Detroit and Orlando, those are teams that have to really work and it looks effort. It's like a Mike Dunleavy Clipper team where, you know, it was like, yeah, they ran something really nice there. That was beautiful, but it was just every time down, it's like, you know, Utah, when they struggle and they don't have real creators on the floor, it's just, I watched Orlando enough because, and it was just like, that's it. It's just an effort. And there's not one thing you can say, oh, God, they're just mis-executing or this is poor. This is well-choreographed offense. It just, again, as you say, they need a few more of those guys, a couple more of those guys, or one more of those guys.
So a talking point within their team right now is that they were whatever they were on defense. They finished the year eighth overall, yeah. But they were much better than that.
They were
second
like top
half.
One or two, like second half.
They had no players receive even a single vote for the all defense team. If they repeat that kind of performance, there's going to be a big push for Aaron Gordon to make all defense. Internally, they view him as the linchpin to their defense. He guarded the best wing scorer every night. I think Aaron Gordon should make the all-star team as soon as this year. And I just am endlessly fascinated by him because his path being an all-star is so obvious. It's to be his version, which is to say a more explosive and a little bit less savvy version of Draymond Green. It's to be the guy on a good team who gets you 15, 8, and 4 and plays elite defense, doesn't need to have a play called for him. Like Aaron Gordon can walk into 15 points a game. Yeah. He can run and cut an offensive rebound. He doesn't need to run one pick and roll to get 15 points a game. And the struggle to for him to just reconcile, like, that's his NBA destiny. If he wants to be a star, that's how he becomes a star. I'm just, if he can do that on this team and they're good and there's all defense buzz, like, I think he's an all-star level player in the East.
He's not as cerebral as Draymond.
That's what I'm saying. Less right. Cerebral is the word. Like, he's never going to read the game that way. Right. Never. And by the way, there are five guys in the world.
He's infinitely more athletic than Draymond. Right. So.
No one reads the game like Draymond. He's a genius. Yeah. He's a basketball savant. He's a genius. Aaron Gordon does not, but he averaged 4 assists a game last year. Very quietly, Aaron Gordon averaged 4 assists a game. He's a good passer.
He is a good passer.
He's explosive. He's a good secondary playmaker.
Decision making is sort of.
Yeah.
They're just.
The decision making is, he wants to be LeBron. He wants to run pick and roll. He wants to average 25 points a game. His path to being an all-star is the other way. And the sooner he figures that out, the sooner he's going to be an all-star. And the sooner the Magic are going to click into a better place than they are because he's really, really good.
I feel like Cliff could sell him on that. I don't know. Players are hard sells.
Like
when you tell them things they shouldn't be doing.
If you told me Orlando finishes third in the East, I don't think that's outlandish. Most casual fans would think that's outlandish. I'm not going to pick
them. If you
tell
me they finish fourth, I wouldn't think it's outlandish. If you tell me they're better than Boston, Philly, or Milwaukee.
So I'm a little lower on Boston than most people.
Yeah, I'm pretty high on Boston.
But I think Boston is clearly the favorite to get that spot.
That third spot?
Yes. I think Orlando's as good as any other team in the conference.
I think there's a solid case. I do worry. It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. Well, those are my confusing teams. We didn't, as predicted, we had no overlap. As I said before, at the beginning, there's so many. And like, we didn't get to Dallas, who has this
Dallas
dude,
was on
this
my
dude coming
list.
Back.
Yeah.
Like their second most important player didn't play last year.
Dallas was one of those confusing because I just don't know what it is. And because no one knows what it is because it's all new.
I had someone from an Eastern Conference team text me, when I tweeted that we're doing this podcast, the Knicks must be on your list. And I said, no, I'm not confused by the Knicks. They're really bad and they had a bad summer and there's no light at the end of the tunnel. The tunnel has been barricaded on both sides.
It's like the tunnel in Runaway Train.
Yeah. There's giant boulders barricaded. They're just bad. They're a bad team. That's worse than they think they are. And poor Fizz. History would suggest Fizz is getting fired. That's just Knicks history. Knicks, they hire coaches, they disappoint for reasons that are outside the coach's control for some or most part, and the coach gets fired. And then they start it over again. I hope not. I think Fizz is a good coach.
I'd like to see him just get some runway there.
If he feels like he's getting fired, if he can feel it coming, I want him to play all the power forwards at the same time with Mitchell Robinson. This is the team you gave me. This is the team. Marcus Morris, you're playing point guard.
So we're looking at a lineup of Randall, Portis, Morris, let's say Gibson.
Gibson and Mitchell Robinson. Throw them all out there. We're going to bring big ball back. We're going to switch everything on defense. Marcus.
Randall, you can put the ball in Randall's
Julius
hands.
Randall's my point,
yeah,
point
Randall's
center.
Randall's my point.
Point center.
And Portis and Morris can move it. I mean.
They can both shoot threes.
Yeah.
Mitchell Robinson can dive down the lane.
So I'm saying like
Taj Gibson.
So let's do this.
Taj Gibson exists.
Morris and Portis at the two and the three. Yeah, and the other two guys, you know, Gibson at the four and Mitchell Robinson at the five.
If Fiz thinks he's getting fired in November.
I think if Fiz doesn't think he's getting fired, he should do that.
He should play that lineup.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
By the way, Knicks fans, Mitchell Robinson is in my six most intriguing players for the season column, so I'm excited about that. As a New Yorker, I'm getting fed up. I'm so envious of Los Angeles. The weather is amazing, and it's the best. Not only is it the basketball capital of the world in the summer because all the players live here, now both teams are awesome at the same time. And the Nets, fine. The Nets are a nice story. Durant comes back. The Knicks just suck. Every year they suck. There's no hope for them to not suck. We thought there was hope for them to not suck all of last year. The prospect of the Knicks not sucking was dangled before me like I was Tantalus in Greek mythology, and it didn't happen. And now there's – why would you come? I can't wait for the first, like, oh, you know who's going to have cap room for Giannis in 2021? The Knicks. Why?
Oh, I'm so.
Do you know what's going to happen if Porzingis starts the season on fire?
Sisyphus in Greek mythology. So there you go.
If Porzingis comes out and is like averaging 30 and 10 in the first month of the season, and he starts every season on fire anyway, I think the fan protests are starting like at Halloween. If he has a big year and you traded him for Dennis Smith and two first round picks that are coming somewhere down the line and cap space,
what does that protest look like?
I don't know.
It's not your generic paper bags. Spirit of Knicks protest could get really interesting.
People are getting tossed out of the garden. That's going to be part of it. The random dudes are going to be tossed out of the garden because you can't badmouth Dolan within earshot of them.
It could get ugly. Not that it already isn't, but I mean.
And again, if they were a normal team.
Because KP was, it's the old Andy Roser. You gotta sell either hope or success in the NBA.
And
as long as KP, even when he was injured, as long as he was present, it was hope. And unless Barrett is the guy.
Right. So if they were a normal team, he would say, okay, Smith's interesting. Knox is interesting. Robinson's interesting. Barrett was just the third pick in the draft. We're going to suck again and get another high pick. We haven't even talked about Ntilikina, who was better for France for 2 weeks than he ever was for the Knicks so far. And we have two future picks from Dallas. Like, it's just not a bad, it's not that bad of a situation. And yet, I have no hope. I have no hope that it's ever, I've crossed the bridge where I'm like, they're just a bad team all the time.
You're invited to Los Angeles anytime. We will.
That's really nice here.
Gladly stamp your passport.
All right, Kevin Arnovitz, it was always fun to do our five most confusing teams. There's a lot to be confused about in the NBA this year, which is actually a good sign.
I am excited for this season more than I've been in recent years.
I'm reinvigorated.
I am too.
I'm invigorated. I'm invigorated and reinvigorated, and I'm ready. Kevin Arnovitz, thank you very much. Let's go have dinner. The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.